Welcome back to Listen to Your Heart. I'm Jerry.
And I'm Jerry's Heart.
Today's topic, Repatha, Evolokimab. Heart, why'd you pick this one?
Well, Jerry, for people who have had a heart attack, like us, diet and exercise might not be enough to lower the risk of another one.
Okay.
To help know if we're at risk, we should be getting our LDL-C, our bad cholesterol, checked, and talking to our doctor.
I'm listening.
And if it's still too high, Repatha can be added to a statin to lower our LDL-C and our heart attack risk.
Guess it's time to ask about Repatha.
Do not take Repatha if you're allergic to it. Serious allergic reactions can occur. Get medical help right away if you have trouble breathing or swallowing, swelling of the face, lips, tongue, throat, or arms. Common side effects include runny nose, sore throat, common cold symptoms, flu or flu-like symptoms, back pain, high blood sugar, and redness, pain, or bruising at the injection site.
Listen to your heart.
Ask your doctor about Repatha. Learn more at Repatha.com or call 1-844-REPATHA.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
We regularly hear on this show from parents who have been battling and continue to battle to try and get adequate services for their children in the area of disability and disability services. But from a legal perspective, how much has the state infringed on the rights of children and their families by not providing this care? Joining me in studio is Gareth Noble. He's a partner at KOD Lyons and a solicitor specialising in child law. Gareth, thanks a million for coming in to us. And we actually spoke on the show yesterday to the Minister for Children and Disability, Norma Foley, this on the foot of the so-called Grace Report. And a point she made was that we have a much more robust system of children's rights now in this country than we did, say, in 1989 when Grace went into care with Family X for the first time. Can you maybe start by giving us a run through what these rights are, what they look like now, and how robust they actually are?
Well, I guess in the area of children's rights, of course, you know, it goes across a vast range of areas. I mean, we're looking at education, obviously, which is a constitutionally protected right. We're looking at the rights of children with additional needs to be assessed. And then we're looking really at, do we have the services, supports and interventions that they and their families and their schools have in order for them to fulfil their potential. So in my work, I see a huge amount of education law cases. I see a huge number of children who require essential and basic services that aren't being realised. Young kids who are languishing on waiting lists in relation to speech and language appointments, psychology appointments. And so what we see is that if we don't have that earlier intervention in place, we store up huge problems for the future. And so the challenge for lawyers such as myself and also for the many brilliant advocacy and representative organisations is to bring awareness to this issue and to make sure that carers and children's rights remain a political priority.
So let's talk about maybe the first port of call that a parent comes up against a paucity of state services with regard to additional needs, and it's that initial assessment, the assessment of needs. So the Disability Act, which is two decades old now, kind of quite clearly sets out a target, a 6-month target, for that you will have that assessment of needs carried out within 6 months. And I think maybe in about between 80 and 90% of cases, that's not met.
Yeah. And it's actually more than a target. It's a legal obligation.
Okay. So they have a legal right then, that child to be assessed in that time frame. When that doesn't happen, which is the majority of cases, how do they go about enforcing that right? Or what's the consequence of that right being denied?
Well, ultimately, it is enforced by the Circuit Court. But before you go to the Circuit Court, you have to exhaust the complaints procedure first. And we've had a lot of difficulties in the numbers of complaints officers to meet the demand for that. But I mean, the Disability Act was actually a very progressive piece of legislation, because what it said to families and to children is you have a legal right to an assessment of need within that 6-month time frame. It also specifically said in the Disability Act that a lack of resources is not a defence. So when we do go to court, of course, in 99% of cases, the court will make the order in favour of the child, because lack of resources is not something that can be opened as a legal defence to those proceedings. However, the reality on the ground is that parents are being told it is in fact a lack of resources that sees their children perhaps not being assessed for 3-4 years when that should be done within that 6 month time frame.
And that court order is what? An order to assess the child?
Yeah, it's to enforce the determination of the complaints officer, because in effect all the complaints officer has to do is take out the calendar and see that 6 months has elapsed, it hasn't been done. Hmm. They then make a finding that they're in breach of the Disability Act, and then the HSC have 3 months within which to action that finding, and if they don't, then the court will enforce that decision.
And are they generally able to, in your experience, action that within the 3 months? Because that lack of resources, I mean, it still applies whether the court order exists or not.
Well, you're into a scenario where, in fact, if you're in breach of a court order, that is a very serious position to be in. And I'm appreciative of the fact that those court orders, for the most part, are in fact complied with.
Okay.
But you know, that is only obviously the starting point. Assessing children and the nature and extent of their disability is no good to parents unless it's followed up by action. And by action, what they mean is proper service provision. Mm. But what we've seen in Ireland, unfortunately, is a diluted form of service provision where the resources are not there in order to provide the services that are recommended, and where we have a HSC who are hell-bent on circumnavigating their responsibilities and looking always to restrict the opportunity to access those services and to make them effectively meaningless as a way of addressing what is a real crisis. I mean, one of the really good things, and it comes back to awareness and it comes back to the strength and the need for service intervention. The last general election probably was the first election, certainly in my lifetime, where disability rights was actually on the agenda. And the reason for that is down to the determination, the effectiveness and the advocacy of parent groups and representative organisations, because TDs and senators from across the political divide see this as a real issue that needs to be challenged. But, you know, we are in April. It is Autism Awareness Month. Mm. I think the media have played a very positive role in opening up people's stories where they haven't been heard and listened to properly. But, you know, we may have increasing amount of autism awareness, but the challenge now is that what we need is increased levels of autism action. And parents that come to me are beyond the need for tea and sympathy. What they want is that speech and language appointment.
Yeah.
What they want is to be able to access an appropriate school placement. They want the SNA support if it's needed in the school. Because what we're seeing, particularly in the educational sphere, is real problems in our schools, not just around school placements and the availability of appropriate school placements, but because of actions that are taken by the state in not resourcing schools properly, but also not providing those early intervention supports for children so that when they come to school, they can fulfil their potential and access their curriculum on an equal basis with their peers.
When you describe the HSC as being hell-bent on diluting services, expand on that, what you mean in practical terms.
In practical terms, when a parent gets an assessment of need, having gone through all of the hoops that the HSC put them through,
yeah,
and they are then provided with a service statement. And that service statement has to set out who's going to provide the services, what services are going to be provided, when are they going to be provided.
So this is your, as you say, your aforementioned speech and language therapy or occupational therapy, physical therapy, physiotherapy, absolutely, whatever it happens to be.
Yeah. And so what we are now seeing is a model of care because of the crisis in service delivery and because of the fact that our Children's Disability Network teams are understaffed. There is, we are told from government, the money there, but they don't have the staff. And so what parents then are forced into a situation is they have to decide, can they afford to wait emotionally as well as financially on services that may never be provided, or are they forced down the private route in order to get the services that the children require? So that's a real problem. The second issue is that the HSC, we are told by government and by the HSC that the money is there, but the staff are not. And yet what we have is a situation in which lots of things within our health service is outsourced to other providers. And yet when it comes to services and supports for children, we do not see the same appetite within the HSC to bring in those services until such time as the HSC have their own complement of staff. So we are suggesting to the HSE, for example, that until such time as the primary care teams and the CDNTs are properly staffed, the parents shouldn't have to pay for those services privately. And there was a memo from February of last year from a very senior person within the leadership of the HSE suggesting to disability teams on the ground that they look at private provision, and yet there is scant evidence that that has in fact has ever been advanced.
And what more your own kind of personal assessment I'm asking about here, but why do you think that is? Because you're right, we do see the HSE kind of acquiesce to this in other areas. I mean, private hospitals, they lean on, and private operating theatres and, you know, consultants working in those private hospitals and the staff, the support staff around them. Public patients are treated in that regard every day, and the HSE effectively foots the bill. They pay UPMC or whoever it happens to be to carry out those services. Why in this particular area is there a reluctance to pay the private speech and language therapist?
I wish I knew the answer to that question, and I think it's a question that a lot of parents ask me. But I guess when you're in a situation in which parents are doing it for themselves, then perhaps there isn't the same pressure to do so. And unless you have a scenario in which, you know, local liaison officers on the ground who are ringing the local children's disability network teams and are told it'll be 3 years for that speech and language appointment, there is a duty, and there's a very interesting judgment of Mr. Justice Oisin Quinn in the High Court, which says the role of the liaison officer is to look for the most expeditious facility available. And I'm not quite so sure that those that are organising services on the ground are being as creative as they could be and should be in order to fulfil those obligations.
Okay, yeah. Somebody might look at it and say, you know what, it's a principle that they adhere to that is close to their hearts, those at senior level in the HSE, about kind of public provision for children in this country. A more cynical person might say, and I think you kind of touched on it there as well, there might be a suggestion or a sense of, well, listen, you know, Gareth's going to pay for that speech and language therapy himself. Mm. So why should we foot the bill?
And the other thing, of course, that parents are seeing in terms of service delivery now is that, in fact, the services and supports are not, in fact, being targeted by the child, at the child directly. So I'm involved in lots of complaints, for example, where we're saying under the Disability Act, the HSE have failed to provide the services contained within the service statement, which is one of the grounds of complaint. And what we're finding, of course, is that then the services that are being provided is, you know, the autism awareness workshop, is the handout, is the YouTube video. It's the course that is, you know, put on during the working day when parents are actually working so that they can fund privately the services and supports. So if you're asking me, are parents satisfied with the level of service provision that they're getting? They're not. And I could litter your whole studio with examples of children who are on paper linked to a local children's disability network or a primary care team, and go through that whole system and come out the other end and are discharged from that service without ever having met a single professional directly, that child themselves. I mean, that isn't a system that any of us can stand over.
No. And it strikes me as well, we shouldn't lose sight of A, the child in all of this, and the consequence of those services being denied or delayed, and also the parents. I mean, it takes a lot for a parent in this situation. There's so much on their plate compared to the rest of us to actually have to go down the legal route. I mean, I can see how some of them are just too exhausted to even contemplate it.
And also too, I guess, a lot of parents who come to me come having exhausted every other avenue and opportunity, and as you say, are exhausted. And they find every door that is closed for them. But as I often say to many parents, particularly in the educational sphere, children and families in Ireland have many more legal rights than they think they have.
Yeah.
And they also have many more legal rights than they're led to believe that they have. So I've given the example of the assessment of need process. We can't do it because we don't have the resources. The Disability Act says something differently. We don't have a school placement. Or we do have a school placement, but it's not an autism class in line with the recommendations. There's a constitutional obligation to provide all children in this state with an education that is suitable, appropriate and adequate to meet their needs. So if a child isn't in a school place or is in a school place where they're really struggling and they should be somewhere else, that is a breach of a constitutional duty. And we cannot breach constitutional rights in Ireland by saying, well, we're not going to resource that, because that in itself is unlawful.
All right. Gareth, listen, thanks a million on that note for joining us. Gareth Noble is a partner at KOD Lyons and a solicitor specialising in child law. This listener says, I've got 3 children waiting on an assessment of need. The 6 months was breached. One is in the Child Disability Network team, but not getting a service, really. They went to outsources, but this was rejected as the private places don't take complex needs in some situations. Then Jen, she's also gotten in touch to say, my son has school avoidance and his school has no supports available to him. I had to pay €2,000 for a private autistic spectrum disorder assessment. I can't afford it and I had to miss paying some bills to pay for this. Jen, thank you for that.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.